Iowa was a very messy affair, with Korn, Newgarden not winning, and the most startling news of them all. Alex Pullo is fuming. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Extra, extra, read all about it. Alex Pullo crashing an IndyCar race for the first time in 2 years. Wild.
And this is not even in the top 10 most problematic things of a weekend that should have promised everything and delivered. Well, in celebration of the recent release of the first major college football game in 11 years, I'd say this race delivered fewer passes than a Kirk Ferentz era Iowa offense.
Nothing but run. If that ball is in the air, get the fuck out of my sight.
700,000 people played it on launch day at once. Wow. Like, that's kind of nuts. Yeah, people had an appetite. We were watching King get blown that
up. Yeah, and 200,000 of them were in our Discord server.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's one thing if he's playing as his alma mater, the University of Pittsburgh, but like he got clapped as the University of Southern California.
Oof, I don't know. USC. I watched him play as Pitt against Notre Dame, and I watched him fucking throw three picks.
It was glorious. Yeah, basically, it was like when Lane Kiffin was Alabama's offensive coordinator, and it was just saying, whenever Lane would get cute, he would just say, Nick Saban would just say, run the ball, Lane, run the ball. Yeah, and that's also apparently an IndyCar race happened. Two of them actually. Let's talk about it. Welcome to episode 534 of Motorsport 101. I'm Dre Harris, and you can probably have already guessed by now, RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley alongside me to talk about a hectic, messy, problematic weekend in Iowa that didn't paint IndyCar in the best of lights, unfortunately. Not for the first time this year. It's been another messy bitch, so we got to talk about it. First of all, RJ O'Connell, how's it going, buddy?
It's going. I hate this heat wave.
Is it hot over there? It's hot over here.
Yeah, funny that, almost like we live like 3 hours worth of driving apart from one another or something.
Yeah, it is currently a fresh 91 degrees in old money, of course.
It's like 30-something in new money. I hate it.
Yeah, with 49% humidity. You walk outside and you basically feel like that one scene of Sarah Connor from Terminator 2.
You feel like you're melting down like IndyCar's hybrid units during qualifying for the Iowa
Oh, yeah. I'm back. You thought that IndyCar was free of my wrath after this hybrid system debut? Not a chance.
I love that Kira, who's in our chat right now, listening in via the power of Patreon, suggested that we actually found a way to disable Cam's mic for the inevitable 5-minute rant that is due about the hybrid power system unit, whatever you want to call it. Now Cam's actually covering an IndyCar race for the first time since, well, before the hybrids even got here. Good luck, I suppose. We'll talk about that very, very shortly. We've also got...
If you wanted mercy, you've come to the wrong place.
Curious, isn't it? I stand by it. Yeah, I do too, but unfortunately I have to let the man cook. It's M101 policy. We also got to talk about Jack Harvey and his injury struggles and the messy solution to that, as well as we found out over the course of the last two weekends. Really, I talked about it a little bit after Mid-Ohio, and unfortunately it continued into this weekend in Iowa. More on that shortly, and we'll talk about the two races themselves. Scott McLaughlin finally breaks his oval duck by getting his first oval victory in a twisty and narrow one against Colton Herter and Joseph Newgarden. Paddle Ward was in the mix as well. And race two, which I can confirm happened. Yes.
Oh, it's
we have no further news at this time.
There was a back marker in the field. It certainly happened for it because his race ended very eventfully.
Yeah, vertically. Did you pray today? I know Stingray Rob did. We'll talk We'll talk about that very shortly on in the back half of the show. But basically, you can find us in the meantime real quick. We are on youtube.com/motorsport101. You can check us out on there. We're on Twitter. Elon Musk's failed business investment at motorsport_101. Our personal handle.
Moving to Austin, Texas.
Delightful. At Dre Harrison 101, because Austin, Texas is the home of messy bitches, and Elon Musk is certainly one of them. And I'm being kind.
That is very harsh on messy bitches.
And at C Buckley 917. If you want to get my bonus thoughts on this entire weekend and how it links into some of the health of Max Verstappen and some of one of his recent admittances, which we'll get to briefly as well, check out the website in our blog section, motorsport101.com/blog, if you want to check out the written stuff. As well, and if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101, where you can actually read part of that DRR early if you were a backer on there. $5 gets you all of our audio episodes early. 10 gets you into the supporters club of our Discord server. You can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Kira and Jason are doing so right now. Thanks guys for listening in and chipping in the chat as ever. But without further ado, right after this, let's get into our Iowa doubleheader, glory to corn, etc.
The long way.
Before we even got a race, qualifying was carnage this weekend. On Saturday afternoon, qualifying was marred by multiple hybrid unit failures, as Jack Harvey, still suffering from neck and back spasms, was forced to take three runs before finishing in the mid-pack, and Colton Herta, already with race one pole, offered another chance to qualify, but Andretti ultimately didn't take it. Ed Carpenter had thoughts after the weekend. We're spending a lot of money to make our racing worse. Yeah. With suspected issues for Joseph Newgarden and Alex Rossi as well, how are we feeling about the hybrid systems, guys?
Not good. That's for damn sure.
The vibes are not immaculate. I will go that far.
Well, it's a classic question. How many issues do they have to crop up before this becomes a genuine issue? Because depending on who you ask in the paddock, there was anywhere between 2 and 4 during that qualifying session. We definitely know that Harvey's regen failed twice over before he got a third run. We know Colton Herta's regen wasn't working on his hybrid unit when he ran, but he still stopped from getting race one pole, mind you, which I thought was also quite interesting. Joseph Newgarden had question marks about his unit. Nothing was done with it, as did Alex Rossi, who was very angry that his regen apparently didn't work, but was not given another run. As mentioned, Harvey was given 3 runs, including one right at the end of the day's running, as did Colton Herta, who was offered one, but ultimately Andretti played it safe, didn't want to risk what they'd already had, because allegedly your times would get removed if you had another go, but no one knew for sure because this had never happened before in an IndyCar qualifying session, and Carl Novak was on the hard camera trying to talk to everybody, trying to figure this out.
Yeah, he's trying to make wheels and deals on the fly with like Harvey and Herta, and while all this is happening, Scott Bitson's waiting just like, can I go out and qualify?
Yeah. My back hurts.
If there's one thing worse than an unreliable hybrid system, it's a series that doesn't know how to approach its unreliable hybrid system.
Because you wouldn't think you would end up in a scenario like this.
Yeah, but
literally nothing in the rule book that covers this.
And like, you're trying to play it fair and safe because it's a spec system. It's supplied by the series itself. It's no one's fault specifically. But then motorsport is not fair, and you're trying to introduce a level of fairness into it for an issue that you have caused.
And this is the point I made in my post. At what point does the disadvantage of not having your hybrid regen work outweigh the benefit of being able to go last in cooler weather and with the most amount of rubber on the track? Because Harvey's run that actually counted was the last one that they did for the day. And Harvey was not meant to do that because in IndyCar qualifying terms, you go in reverse championship order, which ironically meant Harvey had to go first normally, because he's the lowest ranking guy of all the guys who were in the championship that were running, including Catherine Legg, funnily enough.
It means you get the greenest track. It means you get the worst conditions.
It's done by team's championship points.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if we were doing that by Dale Coyne's driver points, then, lock that shit out at the start. More drivers.
In terms of car standings, the 18 Dale Coyne is stone dead last in the leader circle standings.
Missed the 500.
Mm-hmm. Didn't help. Cheers, Nolan.
I just have to sit here and wonder. These hybrid units, which are inherently a pretty big compromise because we refused to build a new car, so we put the energy store where it would fit, so it had to be small, so they don't make very much power, and they had to be engineered by both of your power unit manufacturers because your original partner couldn't cut the mustard, and one of them wants to leave... and they don't work properly yet. Is this a good look?
It's bad.
Is this what you want when one of your engine manufacturers has openly said, yeah, we're 1 foot out the door?
We're 1 foot out the door unless you change a suit. Ironically, formula, which one of the things they proposed was a formula that would basically give them like full reign over shit like software and hybrid development.
The shit that's not working, which has been the entire problem with these hybrid units since they brought them in. Not just here in mid Ohio, where the fact they didn't get the restarter for the engine working until Sunday, the fact that Joseph Newgarden had software issues or he couldn't get his pit limiter turned on properly. The problems are still.
Everybody laugh at Joseph Newgarden going too fast when he shouldn't have due to a software glitch.
That's the series for you, and that's the equipment that he's been given, and that's not his fault. That's unfortunately the series' fault. Like, you wanted to get these out mid-season because you didn't want the emotional backlash of getting them out 3 years overdue. So you thought 2.5 sounded better, and you put them in mid-season. They're not working. Like,
they're not working right,
and it's fucking with people's championships here. Newgarden was on for a top 10 in mid Ohio and would have gotten it, and then this software glitch is out, and next thing you know, he's stone dead last. His race was killed off, and it was through no fault of his own. Like, Dixon's and race it's didn't got even Dixon's start race that
before
weekend.
It even began.
Like, this is exactly what I feared would happen with these hybrids. Like, you've brought them in mid-season, and through no one's fault, per se, directly, it's fucking with people. And it's not nice, and it's not fair, and it's been a PR disaster for the series so far. Ed Carpenter is one of the most respected veterans of the field, and when he's saying we're spending a whole lot of money to make our racing worse, I'm concerned.
I would also especially this in the fact that his godfather is the guy that used to own the series.
Well,
just
true.
Putting that out there.
But he's also going against the grain because it's the series that wanted these hybrids in. No one else was asking for them.
And to that effect, like, they're only making 60 horsepower. They're making less power than the original KERS systems did in F1 15 years ago. It's a whole lot of money, and it's a whole lot of effort and money from your engine manufacturers, again, one of which wants to bail over the situation because you picked the lowest bidder at the start of all of this and you got burned. And there's little to no upside here.
It's not good. None of this is good. And I'm not hearing a whole load of ringing endorsements for the hybrid since they were brought in, like, from anybody. Drivers, team bosses, you name it. Like, this is... It's... Dixon was pissed off the mid-Ohio.
Rightly so. Took a race off the board for him. He was in direct championship contention. Like... And it's a bigger issue when, really, what most hybrid systems in motorsport other than that of Formula One with the H, the turbo motor. They have a level of redundancy where even if you lose the hybrid, you can still run the car. The GTPs are built like that. The old LMP1Hs were built like that. And if you lose the K in F1, depending on what fails, you can get by. Famously so in Daniel Ricciardo's case. Sorry for the bad memories. There's no redundancy with the IndyCar system. If it has an issue, it effectively, like, you more or less lose the gearbox. That's really stupid. We need a new, this is just reason 67,000 that we need a new car.
But where's the new car money coming from? Because it's becoming abundantly clear Roger doesn't want to spend that cash.
Drill it out of the side of Roger Penske's head. Beg him.
I'm glad that Dallara wants to build it, but they're just waiting, like, you know, what are the specs going to be?
What's Roger waiting for here? Like, wouldn't now be the wouldn't now be the time for it, given you're thinking about expanding to 29 cars next year?
And 29 cars that, don't get it twisted, they will spend money if they want to. They will cry poor and then spend tons and tons of money on brand new facilities, week in and week out, and say they can't afford new cars.
It's not the question of having the money. It's the question of whether they want to spend it or not. But at the same time, if you lose Honda, which I feel is real fucking likely now, well, where does Honda take refuge? With Formula One, with cheaper, more hybridized power units that they've rolled HPD and HRC USA into together to develop it. And IMSA. With a spec hybrid system, which, teething issues, has worked pretty well since the middle of last year. Oh, and that 2.4 liter engine that was on track in testing and you abandoned.
I'm good.
Why is IndyCar the way it is?
I guess, what's the best step forward here for the rest of 2024? Because I can't see them. I would be shocked if they drop the system. Because I think they're in a situation now that they put themselves in.
It's the sunk cost fallacy.
Where neither option, either if these issues continue and persist throughout the year, you stick with them or you bail on the program after two races.
Park it till the end. If you want my opinion, park it till the end of the season. Do more testing. You've got a 5 month off season coming up. Park it till the end of the year, run more tests, and figure this out. Because you can't claim that you've had all this testing and all this time and the whole thing was a wonderful, you know, everything ran smooth before you wheeled these out in mid-Ohio, and then you've had somewhere between 2 and 4 units fail in your first time at an oval in Iowa. Don't know how much of that was temperature-related, but even still.
Because it was also hot. Remember, we're in a kind of a nationwide heat wave.
Yeah, and well, where was the room for them to put the energy store for this hybrid system?
That wasn't
right
any.
Right up top of the engine.
In the bell housing in the gearbox.
Yeah, none of this is good. Like, I think you park it for the rest of the year and you run this championship how it was originally meant to be run, and then you can come back to this to start 2025 if need be. But you've got time.
I think this is the definition of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, I agree. There's no nice answer here. But yeah, unfortunately,
because you are ingesting another like bad PR day if you park these hybrids. There is no getting around it. And who's to say that if you park them until 2025, that there may not be another delay or another issue that comes up? I guess my only solace is that, you know, at least this is only happening in qualifying for the most part.
Tell that to Scott Dixon.
Yeah.
And he was unlucky.
He was very unlucky. And if he ends up not winning this championship by 20 to 30 points, he will circle mid-Ohio on the calendar as to that's where I lost it. Rightly or wrongly. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, this is the nature of a series that opened Pandora's box and wanted to put this in mid-season. They knew it was taking a risk, and I'm not sure if the risk is worth it at this point, because nothing good has come out of these hybrids since they were brought in. Nothing. Like,
to be clear, we're not people that say, like, we need to get rid of Hypertech and all top flight modes.
Absolutely not. The difference is it works in the other series that we talk about. That's the issue.
The difference is that in the other series.
We talked about the 2009 Formula One Turris units, like, they weren't scrapped after a year. And then we went back to the drawing board and decided, right, how do we, like, actually do this right? Because 2009, they were basically non-factors. The only teams that committed to them didn't actually do all that well.
Yeah, but that was 15 years ago. I mean, to that same effect, I mean, look, at GTP, it wasn't perfect in 2023, but also they completely retooled the regulations around it. Bosch brought updates for this year, and it's more or less played out. That the cars have been reliable. The parts that have been breaking have been mainly in the cars. Formula One completely retooled their cars in 2014, for better and for worse. Much better if you're Mercedes-Benz. Got there eventually. Wasn't so great at the start of that era. And again, F1 in 2026. IndyCar's trying to shoehorn this into fundamentally a chassis that once had a Lotus engine in it.
That was also a
12-year-old tub.
Yeah. As far as we know, like, they're going to race at Toronto. Like, there's no immediate change on the horizon unless something crazy happens. But yes, as you're about to say, Dre, Jack Harvey had back spasms pop up Saturday afternoon. And from what I understand, he was fine. He was seemingly fine leading up to it. And then Friday during practice, started coming back.
This was brutal to watch. Like, we was watching that qualifying session, and Harvey could barely walk through the pit lane. He was in an immense amount of pain, and he made it abundantly clear on TV interviews he was in a lot of discomfort, and he was just going to try his best to get through it, and he did. You know, he had to do three runs in the end rather than one, and this is a man who was in an immense amount of pain. He raced through Mid-Ohio, and that was a race that he didn't get a break because Mid-Ohio ran caution free. He did the whole race then. He did the whole qualifying session here. He could barely get out of his car unassisted after the first run.
I'm guessing there are tests, just like an F1, where you have to get out of the car in a certain time to be certified to race. And Harvey might have passed that earlier in the day and didn't later.
That's probably the likely answer. I mean, spasms are random. They come and go. If he was fine in the morning and was able to pass, then sure, I understand. But this was another bad look. Like, I can't believe he was allowed to race in Mid-Ohio last week with neck and back spasms when the G-forces of driving one of these cars most affects your neck and your back. That seems to me like an unnecessary amount of risk to, you know, before we're putting guys in a race car like that. And IndyCar's medical and safety team, and I will say to the heavens, are the best in the world. They are wonderful at what they do. I can't believe they cleared him with his back and neck like that. Because what if he gets a spike while he's in the car? While he's driving.
I mean, it's we talked about it a little bit with the way they kind of play the caution game with IndyCar, but that safety team might be the best in the world, but when decisions like this undermine the quality of that safety team,
that's not the responsibility of the people that are going up to a crash car and
driving. No, this is safety team.
This is great on the medical team.
Yes, this is on IndyCar's medical team, because it's not safe for him, and it's not safe for those around him. The last thing Jack would want to do is become a danger to himself and those around him.
But in the situation that he's in, too, the second to last thing Jack Harvey wants to do is pull out by his own choice. Because remember, Harvey is 31 years old and he's been around the game a while. He just got dropped from Ray Hall, Letterman Flanagan Racing, and he's on a piecemeal deal at Dale Coyne, which is, at least in our opinion, his last shot to try and at least stick around with any chance of racing in the future. And if he pulls out of that seat by choice, eventually Connor Daly, who is in a similar situation career-wise, did step in. And now he's been parked for Hunter McElroy. And you got to think, well, damn, was that my last shot at IndyCar? Mm. Did I just surrender that voluntarily because I said I couldn't race?
When I wrote about this on the website, I tied it up with a lot of the discussions that was made about Max Verstappen, who recently admitted in a magazine interview, and he was ranking all 60 of his career wins. He talked about USA 2021. And it was a race where, he narrowly beat Lewis Hamilton in what was a DRS dogfight at COTA. And he admitted that he was still suffering from vision problems. Like, a lot of his peripheral vision was a blur while he was driving the car because he was still dealing with the effects of the 51G incidents he had at Silverstone earlier that year when Hamilton put him in the wall at a cops at Silverstone. And that was 7 rounds, and I think it was 4 months prior. And a lot of people, unfortunately, because it's a Hamilton Verstappen based topic, were arguing in bad faith that, oh, why did the FIA miss this? Why didn't Max pull out? To which my first point was, if Max misses even 1 round due to that injury, he probably doesn't win the championship. It was his first chance to win a world championship. This is what elite athletes do. And whether we like to admit it or not, elite athletes will play through pain. They will play through injury because for them, the opportunity cost is too great for them to pull out. As RJ quite rightly pointed out with Jack Harvey, if Harvey pulls out of that race, there's a good chance he doesn't get another IndyCar race ever again. Connor Daly is a solid backup. We all know can drive a car at a good
level.
The
only thing is Connor Daly is also similar age, similar career spot in his career. Mm-hmm. The thing more with Jack Harvey is he might get jumped by somebody like Toby Sowery, who we know is going to finish out the road courses in the 51 car. It was driven by Catherine Lake this weekend. And Hunter McElroy is going to drive in his place the Indianapolis runner-up from last season, who's been racing IMSA LMP2s in the Endurance Cup this year. Is going to jump in Toronto.
Yeah, so I don't agree with it, but when you combine the factor of we still are barely scratching the surface when it comes to how we deal with brain, head, and head injuries, in a combination with athletes that you will have to kill some of them to pull them out of a racing seat when it comes to injuries and the opportunity that comes with them. We're all NFL fans here. How many NFL players have either lied about their symptoms or lied about being concussed or play through pain because they know if they get cut, they're probably done?
I got up at 3 in the morning to watch Patrick Mahomes play the second half of the Super Bowl while probably on some of the most incredible painkillers that the Kansas City medical staff had to offer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason, he's running around on one ankle.
Yeah, and Jason made the great point in our chat. Remember Oliver Askew, who lied about his concussion symptoms and then got cut by McLaren after the symptoms were so bad, he had to pull out of a race and he didn't tell his team how badly he was struggling. Again, another issue of delayed concussion symptoms we didn't talk about. It cost Askew most of his racing career because he's not raced in a car since the end of 2022 when he was in Formula E with Andretti. Askew, as we know it, as an active racing driver, is done.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird to say about a driver who is an IndyNets champion and seemingly had a bright future in front of him before all this happened, and it also becomes another notch in the bad faith of McLaren IndyCar. But I digress.
It sucks. And all of this, to me, and I feel like this is part of the factor here, is that the 18 car is last in the owner's standings. And if you park, if you don't race a car, you get zero. Even if you start a race and park the car afterwards, you still get 5 points.
Yeah, they need every point that they can get. They have gone through 9 different drivers, but the thing is,
IndyCar record.
Dale Coyne Racing is the equivalent of a team that is living paycheck to paycheck because they just lost HMD as a big backer. That's Lucas Pops' company. Rick Ware Racing, as we know, does not offer a lot, and every deal that has been strung together has not been full season.
Yeah. They are in poor straits. They are scrambling for every point they can get. And unfortunately, I mean, I'm almost certain the 18 will finish last in the owner standings, and that's going to be over $1 million that team's going to be missing out on if they don't make it into the top 22 by year's end. And it's unlikely the 51 will either, unfortunately. They are very uncompetitive right now.
This is the last team still surviving from the other side of the split that has, generally speaking, especially when you put money behind them and give them stability and good people, generally
same with them being
five very classes above its weight.
Yeah, and yet with the loss of Malukas and the loss of a major backer, this very much feels like a team in its death throes.
Yeah.
I sir.
And
It gives me big 90s F1 Minnow vibes.
It's not great. It's not great at all. And it sucks that Jack Harvey's health felt like a bargaining chip. And the man drove race one, and I think he was 22 laps down.
He did like 30 laps and then just pretty much parked it for the day.
And he looked like he was about to pass out when he got out of the car.
Yeah. For what? 5 points. 5 points. I don't get it, man. I think there are too many people in IndyCar's higher-ups that are making these decisions that are having detrimental effects on the drivers and the racing. And we'll get to that in race two, because you know what was going to come up here, and it's my least favorite rule in motorsport, but Jack Harvey's health should not have been front and center and almost as a bargaining chip for what the struggles of Dale Coyne are at the moment. Like, it's not Jack Harvey's fault this team is in the shitter. And, like, it was actually genuinely painful to watch him this weekend, because he should not have been anywhere near a race car, in my opinion. It's just, yeah, like, and as Kira points out in our chat, the excuse of not getting daily any track time so he couldn't race in race one was crap, because they had to get the concert in. Yeah, the concert was the priority, because the Hy-Vee rounds at Iowa are now big concert going hybrid weekends, in a sense.
They're not just races. They are full
entertainment events,
festival style events, just like Formula One.
Are you telling me they couldn't have delayed that concert by 20 minutes so that Connor Daly in the 18 could have had 15 minutes to run 20 laps? This is a man who's qualified here on pole position. He knows how Iowa works. Give him 15 minutes in the car to reacclimatize. If his times are competitive, let him race.
And
the concert goers, like, won't mind waiting 15 minutes for that to happen.
And it shocks me IndyCar didn't claim something like force majeure on that anyway, because Connor Daly has literally been on pole here.
Well, we've always said that, like, you know, we should try and follow the rules whenever we possibly can. I agree that they should have found some way to get him track time.
Sense also has to prevail at some point.
Common sense has to prevail in a lot of different racing series, and IndyCar is certainly no exception.
And to be fair, the book got thrown out of the window in the qualifying session minutes beforehand already.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, what are we really talking about here at this point? We saw Carl Novak on camera for 20, 30 minutes, and props to the NBC commentary booth, because God bless him, they tried to make sense of all this in real time, and they had very limited information on there. I had people from the track tweet me during the session saying, Dre, what are they saying on TV? We don't know what's going on here.
They're looking at fucking, they're looking at Scott Dixon just sitting at the end of the pit lane going, is he going to go out?
Well, what's going on here? You know, it was a mess. It was a horrible fucking mess. It was, that Saturday was one of my lowest points as an IndyCar fan this season. That was awful to sit through.
We did eventually get some racing. The good news is that it was not chock full of mechanical dramas. The bad news is
everything else.
Any fucking thing happened because Scott McLaughlin won the first race comfortably. He took advantage of a swept highlighted turn run in the late run past Colton Herta, who got jobbed on a pit stop coming out just a little bit behind Scott McLaughlin, then got stuck at the tail end of the lead lap.
McLaughlin, I feel like we can go a little bit even earlier than that because, what caused us to have basically nothing happen? Well, we had a one-line racetrack. Why did we have a one-line racetrack? Because we had a partial repave, which then didn't get done because of a schedule clash with NASCAR.
NASCAR wanted a tire test because they had a date at Iowa Speedway coming up.
All right. Ironically, the Iowa promoters are talking about making it a proper hybrid event with NASCAR, as if the last 3 years of IndyCar investment just didn't happen. That felt like a spit in the face, by the way.
Yeah. If you tried anything but the low line 5 laps after a restart,
dead.
Well, you're dead.
And it's why I had a feeling like every position you could gain straight after a restart, like I watched
we saw people being merciless
on the outside.
Joseph Newgarden, maybe a Scotty nominee for passing damn near everybody.
He got by 8 cars and it still wasn't enough to really kind of vault him into any contention. Fuel strategy and great pit work was virtually how he got back up into third place. I'm out of work, should be said. And we're also missing the fact that Alex Blow crashed. And it's not really because of the partial repay for the hybrid or anything like that. He admitted like he just made a mistake pushing when he shouldn't have, which is weird.
Yeah, because he was caught up in the pits again. He was running in the top five, but then he had, his clutch didn't work coming out of the pits. Again, software glitch. Fell back to 19th because he was in the whole field had come in during a caution. So it was a race off pit road. Pelot had lost that race badly, came out 19th, got back up to 11th again, was going too hard. Did the equivalent of Jorge Martin, tucked the front and spun out and crashed. The first
was a weird
time,
one, too. He was very far down the front straight, and it just came around on him.
First time Alex Palou has DNF'd in an IndyCar race since that time he was taken out by Marcus Ericsson at Road America in 2022, 37 races ago.
That doesn't feel real. It is real. Doesn't feel real.
Yeah. It brought all the title contenders in a fair amount. I'll talk a little bit about some of the math on that in a minute.
It effectively effectively undid what happened in Mid-Ohio.
Yep.
More or less. That happened. McLaughlin took that Highline road on Herta, got past him in the end. McLaughlin, O'Ward, Newgarden, top three. Ironically, probably the three best overall races in IndyCar were the three for the three fronts. As McLaughlin said, he felt like an IndyCar driver now because he finally got his first oval win. I think he took that Texas photo finish against his own teammate in 2022 personally.
It's weird that he hasn't won one of these because like it feels been like good. He's been good ever since he got one of these. By the way, shout outs to Scott McLaughlin also like needing a control alt delete during his one of his interviews on television. Yeah.
Are we live?
We're live, pal.
Were you low again?
No. Very much so. But McLaughlin winning race one. And yeah, it's been long overdue for a McLaughlin oval win. That was the first of the triple crown of IndyCar that he got right first. He was a great oval racer right out of the box. He's been fantastic on ovals this year. We forget he was the Indy 500 pole sitter with the fastest run in history. You know, you don't fluke shit like that with McLaughlin. And we all know how good he can be. And yeah, this was a long time coming, and he finally got it.
You know what else is a long time coming? Because, like, and it shocked me to learn that when Will Power won race two, spoiler, Will Power won race two, that was his first oval win since Pocono 2019. And at that time, we were thinking Will Power had just become the new oval master of the series.
Yeah, at that time, he was winning ovals left, right, and center. Won the 500.
Awful at them, or at least...
That was basically pre-Buckley. That was like my third or fourth show on the air.
Yeah, like that was... Like, how on earth has that been his first oval win in nearly 5 years? That is ridiculous. And to be fair, it took something ridiculous for Power to win it, because if you didn't see what happened in race two, well, Power started 22nd on the grid after botching his qualifying session. The whole field has come in right around lap 90 to 102 or so because of the nature of an empty tank of fuel. Alex Palou is in the pits as race leader when Agustin Canepino, and I can't believe I'm saying this, spun out on the exit of pit road, hit the wall, his car stopped working, and guess what IndyCar does? It delays the caution while Palou is in pit lane. He gets to take advantage of the fact that the caution came out after he comes out of the pit road. McLaughlin can't go at full racing speed to catch up with him. He was net leader when he came in early. Palou inherits the lead. The last guy who hasn't stopped has been Will Power, who was on 101 laps running as it was coming in. He's now gained a lap on the field because I was so short. He gets to pit under caution and then comes out in second.
It's basically just like, didn't Colton Herta get basically trapped like a lap down when he just pitted during the caution, but not quick enough or late enough?
Yeah.
To where he kept him from going a lap down. Uh-huh. Because I was thinking at the time, like, he just won the lottery. And then as I looked, I realized, well, damn, he did the opposite of win the lottery. Not only did he win nothing, but the IRS is coming to seize his lottery ticket.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. You've got to pay your taxes. And after that, Power, having come in late and then running immediately under caution, had more fuel in his tank than everybody else. We all knew what was going to happen. Palou was trying to save as much fuel as he can during the second stint. It was only one more stop under green for the rest of the day. The rest of the race ran caution free. We all knew that Palou, the only way he could win was on an undercut. Power comes in a lap later to protect from the undercut attempt. He was a second faster on pit road overall. Came out in front.
8/10 in the box alone. Penske were money bags in the pit lane.
And it won him the race, because once Power came out in front and Palou came out behind, there was nothing Palou could do.
Yep.
Like, no
scum air, sewage air, infinite filth air. That was
Adam Ward said, like, Alex Palou should go to Las Vegas.
Yeah, Palou and Power should go to Las Vegas immediately with the amount of luck they just had. Palou was salty as shit after this race.
Which is crazy for a guy who just finished second and sixth on the weekend and was within like 52 points of the championship lead as a whole.
Well, the problem is, again, is Palou basically made up for what he did the previous day by getting points back on everyone but Power in the championship.
Yeah, the big winner of the weekend was Scott McLaughlin, who's gained, I think it's 46 points on Palou over these two races. McLaughlin's back in title contention. He's only 60, I think he's like 66 points back now.
65 points back with 6 races left.
He's in the mix.
Including the doubleheader in Milwaukee. Toronto's up next, currently underwater. I think it'll be all right by then.
Yeah, like, it's... I can't tell you. Like, I was hoping the second race was going to be boring.
I did not watch this race because I was doing other shit for work.
You missed nothing. This was
literally nothing.
I heard I missed nothing until this the finish.
Basically, before the finish, this was basically like IndyCar's Monaco of this year. If you didn't pass on the restart, you didn't pass, period.
I've heard so many things as to why this... People tried to theorize so many things about why this specific weekend was awful. And
I think everybody... It's a combination of everything we talked about thus far. Everybody's overthinking it.
They did not finish the repave, and it led to a terrible race.
Yeah, it was a one-lane racetrack. If you went on the outside, you hit the wall. It really was that simple.
And people want to say, like, Firestone isn't up to the task because, like, they had to shorten the Indy Nets race because of it, because their tires blistered. Like, generally speaking, when have you ever heard of, like, a catastrophic safety failure from a Firestone IndyCar tire?
I'd say the one thing I will go to bat with IndyCar for over anything else, they probably have the best tire supplier in all of motorsport.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can count it on a watch. It is a scheduled tweet for a Goodyear tire controversy in NASCAR, and they've been together for 30 years.
It is like Michelin and WEC / IMSA, Firestone and IndyCar. End of list. Everyone else wishes they were at that standard.
The only thing I would say that like Firestone has done wrong is bring too hard a compound tires, which they were doing to accommodate for the new hybrid units making the car heavier and putting more power through the tires.
Well, it's a good thing we have the hybrids that, you know, when they work, they put more power through the tires.
We're overthinking this.
Yeah.
This partial repave stinks. They need to just go ahead and finish the whole thing. Finish the whole repave.
They tried.
I just re-upped on this event. Mm-hmm. You know, despite you know the faux pas from the Iowa organizers, they did just re-up this event long term, and you better hope you fix this.
Yeah, I it was an overthinking. People overthought this. The repaving was dreadful. It killed this race before it even started. They tried a high line practice, and they were going 15 miles an hour slower on the high line. It was
completely untenable.
It was dead on arrival. Marcus Ericsson tried it and wrecked a car trying to avoid a McLaughlin spun during practice. Catherine Legg spun during practice. It was a no-hoper from day one on this one.
But Racing is generally pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah. This was a disaster, and that was even talking about the final lap, where, for those who missed it, and you've probably seen it on social media by now, Alex Rossi runs out of fuel on the final lap of the race. Stingray Rob, who was running directly behind him, obviously has no idea that Rossi's out of gas, can't take an evasive action in time. Let me just clarify, this one's not on Stingray. Do not give him shit for this. Stingray did not see it coming. He's driven over the back of Rossi's car, flipped in the air, landed upside down. The impact was 109 Gs.
Yikes.
When he hit the ground on that one, which means Stingray Rob's body weighed about 9 tons when he hit the ground. Slid sideways about 500 yards down the track. Ed Carpenter and Carl Kirkwood have spun out themselves trying to avoid the wreck.
And like one split second you think you've seen something like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck just happened? Well, certainly that's the worst of it. And then you look at one car and another car doing rule 34.
Yeah.
Nose down, gearbox up.
Yeah, exactly. And thank God for the aero screen, because Ed Carpenter's car was on top of Carl Kirkwood's aero screen when it was all said and done.
Yeah, dude was wearing a gearbox as a hat.
Yeah. Thankfully, everybody turned out all right. Stingray Rob was airlifted to hospital at the time because he did briefly pass out upon impact. Yeah. But was given the once over in hospital and was released the same night. So thankfully, nothing serious.
Worst no fractures, and it looks like he's racing tomorrow. That's
he is. Yeah, he's been cleared. He's been cleared for now.
Did you see the poster that NBC's team put up for the Iowa race? The one with like the cars racing the cornfield and silence. Did you notice in the back they have like a picture of a car getting sucked straight up tail to nose by a UFO?
Yeah.
Save this now because he's all right. Stingray Rob tried to imitate that.
That car had sort of the same kind of axis travel as a Mercedes CLR.
That's the kind of access travel that Graham Rahal did in the virtual Indy 500 a few years back.
No. No, he was looking at the bolts on top of the timing tower.
Yeah, just an unfortunate incident. Everybody else was okay, thankfully. The worst Rob injury he had was he slightly burnt his finger on the aero screen after it was all said and done, just as a friction burn. But thankfully, everybody was okay. But yeah, what a crazy wreck that was.
We understand a lot of things about the current IndyCar chassis, how it's old, it's a patched-together project.
It is nothing else.
Ever hear us say that this car is not fit for purpose in terms of safety.
That is its one overwhelming redeeming quality. This thing is a tank.
Yeah, they built them tough down there on that one. And just before we go as well, we found out in the days leading up to this race that this was going to be Lee Diffie's, for now at least, his final race as IndyCar's lead commentator. He's heading over to do the Olympics very, very soon. He's staying with NBC, but he's going to be, for now, but he's doing the Olympics over there. And then I think after that, he's going to be Fox's play-by-play for their NASCAR coverage going forward. So I'd just like to say, and I think I speak for everybody here when I say thank you, Lee, who's been a tremendous lead commentator for this series as long as I can remember. He's done a brilliant job of bringing the noise, bringing the energy to a series that has often demanded it from the people that dare cover it, because this series is great most of the time, and it needs an enthusiastic, energetic commentator to lead that conductor to play that soundtrack, and he's been fantastic.
I'll say this as well for Lee Diffie, who's actually staying at NBC, replacing Rick Allen as the full-time Cup Series commentator for the back half of the deal.
Holy upgrade.
Lee Diffie has done the job. I know some people out there generally do not like his overenthusiasm. I say to you, you're wrong. And I also feel like people were thinking will fans tuning in gravitate towards a non-American voice being the play-by-play guy for the Indianapolis 500? I certainly did not mind the change. I certainly did not mind that Australian was the voice of America's greatest spectacle in motor racing. The calls to the end of 2019.
Look, I can't think of a race, RJ. I can't think of a race thinking all the way back to the Daytona Proto Turtle era of DP.
Yeah.
Where Lee didn't do an exceptional job.
Yeah, he was made to be very versatile in his formative days working in America for Speed Channel. He was also Supercars commentator for some time. He called a number of different Bathurst 1000s. Was Formula One's play-by-play guy at NBC before all this.
It was fantastic at that, too. Still in prime that we no longer have that coverage here in the U.S.
And, now, even at the Olympics, he does a pretty damn good job at athletics.
If it races, he's good at commentating over it, even if it's just people.
Bobsleigh, God, I wish I Lee Diffie calling peak X Games Street, which would be so cool.
Yeah, he is one of the most versatile commentators in the world, period, at this point. If it races, Lee Diffie can call it, and he's going to do a phenomenal job at the Olympics next month, no doubt. Next week, I should say, because it starts on Friday. Holy shit. At time of recording. Next Friday, I should say. But it's only 8 days away as we record this. And he's going to crush it. I have no doubt in my mind he's going to crush it, and he will crush NASCAR, and that's a big win for NASCAR over there. IndyCar's loss will absolutely be NASCAR's gain. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And thankfully, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you call this series. You certainly brought the action. No doubt about that.
Absolutely. We wish you had gotten a better pair of races to send you off on.
No kidding.
My summary for this one, try again next year.
Yeah.
Finish the damn repave
and try again next year. IndyCar is back.
Fix the damn hybrid systems.
that wouldn't hurt either. IndyCar is back probably at Toronto this weekend. It is currently underwater as we speak. It's been some horrible rainfall up there this past
week. Had that in Hungary.
Hopefully it'll wash out by the time we get to the actual racing this weekend. So IndyCar is back in Toronto this weekend. And also Formula One will be back next week as well. As the next episode will be on the Hungarian Grand Prix. Can Hamilton go back-to-back with a venue where he's won at 9 times? We'll have to wait and see. Who knows at this point for F1. It's going to be a fascinating Hungarian Grand Prix. I don't think Max is winning this one by 33 seconds somehow. But more on that next week. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Until next week, thank you very much for listening. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
But will it be pullover with a full front wing next week, Tang?
I'd say it's only just polo gun. I don't know. Also, good luck to everybody in the London.
Bruh, 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 bruh.